Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, and welcome to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. I'm your host this evening, Steve Taylor. Tonight's story begins with a warning, the kind most people ignore until it's far too late. An archivist discovers an impossible journal hidden among forgotten relics, a text that seems less like a record and more like an invitation. Its pages speak of vanished worlds, thinning veils, whispered heralds, and a hunger vast enough to consume reality itself. And the deeper he reads, the more he begins to understand a terrible truth. Some knowledge does not illuminate, it summons. Settle in and dim the lights. The show is about to begin. Before we get to tonight's feature, however, we'd like to thank our dedicated supporters in the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights patrons area. For just $7.99 a month, members receive ad-free listening, early access to new episodes, exclusive content, and our complete archive, with discounted annual options available as well. Your support helps us continue crafting the immersive horror experiences you've come to expect. Week after week, tale after tale. To learn more or become a member, visit ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com. Thank you for helping us bring nightmares to life, month after month. Originally appearing on Scary Stories Told in the Dark, Season 16, Episode 18, on January 26th, 2025, tonight's tale is performed by Malcolm Blackwood, the dark and distinguished host of that very podcast, with production by Aaron Sawicki. And now, without further delay, I present to you from author J.P. Netherrain, Journal of a Dead World.
Part 1. I must begin this account by imploring the reader to turn away, to consign this text to flame or ocean, and seek no further knowledge of the horrors it records. What I have seen, what I have done, it has unraveled the fragile threads of my sanity, leaving only tatters where once resided certainty and comfort. Yet, I persist in recounting this tale, for the folly that ensnared me may soon ensnare you. If you have found this journal, it is already too late. My descent into madness began with the discovery of a journal unlike any other. I was employed at the time as an archivist for the Alderbury Collection, a modest but peculiar repository of artifacts housed in a crumbling Gothic structure on the outskirts of Thornwood. The collection was notorious for its eclectic inventory, rusted implements of dubious utility, untraceable curios, and tomes in languages no living scholar could identify. It was a haven for forgotten things and, as I would soon discover, things best left forgotten. The journal came to my attention during the cataloging of an unsorted crate delivered from an estate sale in southern Devon. Its arrival had gone unnoticed for weeks, buried beneath more conventional items, faded oil paintings, cracked porcelain, and a brass telescope whose lenses were inexplicably clouded. When I unearthed the journal, I was immediately struck by its uncanny nature. Bound in a material I could not identify, the cover bore a texture that was neither leather nor cloth, but something disquietingly organic, as if it were alive once, but no longer. The pages, despite their antiquity, were unyielding to the slightest crease, and they emitted a faint metallic sheen under lamplight. Etched upon the cover were symbols that seemed to shift subtly when viewed from the corner of one's eye, a phenomenon I dismissed initially as fatigue. Inside, the writing defied immediate comprehension. It was a chaotic amalgamation of languages, ancient runes interspersed with characters resembling mathematical formulae, and, most disturbingly, fragments of modern script in unmistakable English. The latter appeared hastily scrawled, as if their author had been in mortal peril while committing them to the page. Phrases such as, "the veil is thinning," and "we failed to appease it," leapt out at me, their ominous implications gnawing at my thoughts. The journal's unnerving quality was not confined to its contents. Upon prolonged contact, I became aware of a subtle vibration emanating from it, faint but perceptible, like the hum of a far-off engine or the breathing of some slumbering beast. It grew stronger when my hands rested on its surface, and I could not shake the impression that it responded to my touch. I attempted to put it aside, to continue my work cataloging the remaining items in the crate, but an inexplicable compulsion drove me to return to the journal. It was as though an invisible thread bound me to it, tightening with each passing moment. I reasoned that deciphering its contents would banish the unease it stirred within me. Instead, it would become the catalyst for my undoing. Using my modest proficiency in ancient languages, I began translating portions of the text. Progress was slow, for the symbols defied conventional grammar and syntax, but certain fragments emerged with terrifying clarity. "They came from the void beyond the stars," one passage read, "and the air itself betrayed us." Another warned, "Do not follow the lights, they lead only to hunger." What struck me most was the increasing sense that these words were not meant for the author's kin or kind, but for some distant and alien audience, perhaps even for us. As I labored over the journal, peculiar phenomena began to manifest in my immediate surroundings. The shadows cast by my desk lamp seemed darker and more defined, as though imbued with a depth that defied natural light. Faint whispers emerged in the stillness of the archive, too indistinct to decipher, but unmistakably real. My colleagues dismissed my concerns, attributing them to long hours and the isolating quiet of the collection. But I knew better. Something had awakened in me, or perhaps around me, and it was inextricably tied to the journal. By the end of the first week, I could no longer deny the compulsion that had overtaken me. I took the journal home, defying the strict protocols of the Aldebaran collection. It was a reckless decision, one that I would come to regret profoundly. But at the time, I rationalized it as necessary for more intensive study. The house I rented was a modest affair on the edge of the village, surrounded by dense woods that muffled the din of civilization. It was there, in the oppressive solitude of those nights, that the journal began to reveal its true nature. In the small hours of the morning, as I pored over its pages by the light of a flickering candle, I encountered a passage that froze the blood in my veins. "To hold this tome is to invite the gaze of that which watches," it read, "and once it sees, it does not look away." My hand trembled, and the candle's flame guttered, casting the room into a restless dance of shadows. For the first time, I considered abandoning the journal, consigning it to the fire, or burying it deep within the earth. Yet even then, I knew such measures would be futile. The journal had found me, and it would not let me go. Part 2. The journal's mysteries consumed me utterly, and with each passing night, its sinister pull tightened. I began to dream, not of mundane concerns or trivial memories, but of a world not my own. These dreams were vivid beyond description, suffused with sights, sounds, and sensations so alien that my mind rebelled at their recollection. Even now, I struggle to put them into words, for what I beheld seemed to mock the very foundation of human perception. The visions began as fragments. I saw a vast and arid plain beneath a sky that defied the natural order. A sky not blue or gray, but a sickly green hue streaked with veins of black lightning. Towering spires of obsidian-like material jutted upward at impossible angles, casting shadows that seemed to writhe with unnatural vitality. The ground was scorched and cracked, exhaling thin tendrils of vapor that reeked of sulfur and decay. Amid these desolate landscapes, there were remnants of a once mighty civilization. The ruins were immense, their architecture cyclopean and profoundly alien. There were no straight lines, no angles that conformed to human understanding of geometry, only arcs and spirals that seemed to twist inward upon themselves. As I walked through these forsaken streets, a growing sense of unease settled over me, as though the very air resented my presence. It was not long before I realized that I was not alone in these dreams. Shadows moved at the edges of my vision, indistinct forms, too indistinct to describe, yet imbued with a palpable malevolence. They did not approach, but their presence was a torment in itself. Worse still were the sounds, faint whispers that carried no words, only a malign intent, and a deep, rhythmic drumming that seemed to emanate from the very ground. When I awoke from these dreams, drenched in sweat and trembling, I would find the journal open beside me. Though I was certain I had closed it before retiring, its pages lay bare, revealing fresh passages that I had not yet deciphered. These passages were more coherent than the others, as though the journal's author, or authors, had anticipated my dreams and sought to guide me. Their warnings were explicit and horrifying. "We knew it as the devourer of realities," one passage read. "It feeds not on flesh, but on the essence of worlds, hollowing them out until only an echo remains." Another described its approach. "It begins with the subtle unraveling of the familiar. The lights falter, the air thickens, and the ground becomes a stranger beneath one's feet. Then comes the silence, and after that, nothing." The author's desperation bled through every word. They described how their people had sought to halt the entity's advance through rituals and sacrifices, but all such efforts had failed. The force they called the Devourer was beyond comprehension, let alone defiance. It was not evil in the sense that humans understand the term. It was simply hunger, vast and infinite, devouring without malice or mercy. As I read, a horrifying realization dawned on me. The events described in the journal bore an uncanny resemblance to recent occurrences in our own world. Reports of unexplained phenomena, massive bird migrations, strange weather patterns, and entire villages going eerily silent had begun to surface in the news. I recalled an article about a research station in the Arctic where the staff had vanished without a trace, leaving behind only cryptic scrawlings on the walls and equipment that seemed inexplicably corroded.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
At first, I dismissed these connections as mere coincidence, the product of an overactive imagination inflamed by the journal's contents. But the coincidences became harder to ignore. One night, as I flipped through the journal's pages, I found an entry that described a phenomenon known as the thinning of the veil. It was said to manifest as a black fog that crept across the land, consuming all it touched and leaving behind only a barren wasteland. That same night, the fog appeared in my dreams. I saw it slithering through the dead world's ruins, an inky tide that swallowed entire structures and blotted out the grotesque sky. Within the fog were shapes, shifting and amorphous, and their movements suggested both hunger and an unearthly intelligence. The fog seemed to move with purpose, yet its purpose was beyond my grasp. When I awoke, the air in my room felt heavier, as though tainted by the dream. The shadows cast by the flickering candle seemed darker, and for a moment I was certain they moved independently. My hand trembled as I reached for the journal, compelled once more to seek answers. I knew this compulsion was dangerous, but the alternative, ignorance, seemed even more perilous. It was during this fevered state of study that I uncovered the journal's most chilling revelation. Scattered throughout its pages were fragments of prophecy, warnings that transcended the boundaries of time and space. One passage in particular struck me with the force of a physical blow. The devourer comes to all worlds, but its arrival is not without heralds. It sends its whispers ahead, sowing disarray and fear. When the veil thins, it is already too late. I began to keep track of the parallels between the journal's warnings and the events unfolding on Earth. The pattern was undeniable. The world's unraveling had already begun, and I had no doubt that the journal was part of that process. It was not merely a record of a dead world's last moments. It was a message, sent across the void to warn or perhaps to entrap. The nights that followed were an unrelenting torment. My dreams became more vivid, more visceral, and the line between vision and reality began to blur. I would wake to find objects in my room displaced, their position subtly altered as though by unseen hands. Once, I heard faint whispers emanating from the journal itself, a sound so soft and fleeting that I questioned my own senses. Despite these terrors, I could not stop. The journal's revelations were a siren song, pulling me ever deeper into the abyss. I knew, even then, that my pursuit of its secrets would lead to my ruin. But I also knew that the knowledge it contained was the only hope of understanding the horrors to come, and perhaps, just perhaps, of delaying them. Part 3. It began with the shadows. At first, I convinced myself it was nothing. A trick of the mind wrought by exhaustion and the relentless gloom of my solitary nights. But as the days wore on, I could no longer deny the truth. The darkness in my home had taken on a life of its own. Shadows no longer moved as they should. They stretched unnaturally, pooling in corners and along walls in defiance of the flickering lamplight. At times, I would catch movement in my peripheral vision, a faint, slithering motion. But when I turned to look, there was nothing there. My dreams, already a source of torment, became unbearable. The visions of the dead world intensified, growing more coherent yet infinitely more horrifying. I saw its final days with a clarity that robbed me of breath. Its skies had turned black, its air poisoned by the fog that crept like a living tide. The last remnants of its people huddled in their strange cities, their distorted architecture twisted even further by the encroaching madness. They whispered prayers to gods long dead, their faces masks of despair. Then came the screams. The voices of the dead echoed in my mind even after I awoke. Even after I awoke, their cries blending into the faint, rhythmic drumming that now seemed to emanate from the journal itself. I had moved it to my study, determined to keep it away from my bedroom, but it was as though the thing radiated an aura that no walls could contain. The whispers, indistinct but malevolent, pervaded every corner of my home, growing louder the longer I ignored them. By the second week, I could no longer trust my senses. Objects shifted inexplicably, their positions altering when I looked away. The air grew heavy, suffused with a subtle vibration that made my teeth ache and my limbs tremble. I would hear faint scratching sounds at night, as though something vast and unseen was brushing against the walls of my home. Sleep became a distant memory, and my every waking moment was consumed by the journal's horrors. Desperation drove me to seek help, though I knew not where to turn. My colleagues at the Alderbury Collection had already dismissed my growing paranoia as the ravings of an overworked mind. The Internet offered no solace, its forums teeming with skeptics and charlatans. In the end, I sought out a retired linguist by the name of Professor Armitage, whose expertise in ancient languages was unparalleled. He agreed to examine the journal, though his tone suggested more curiosity than belief. When I delivered the journal to him, I noticed an immediate change in his demeanor. His jovial expression faded, replaced by a furrowed brow and a pallor that deepened as he turned its pages. "This," he murmured, his voice trembling, "this cannot be." He traced the strange symbols with a shaking finger, his eyes darting nervously about the room as though expecting something to emerge from the shadows. "What do you mean?" I asked, my voice hoarse from days of silence. "These symbols," he said, "are not merely language. They are invocations, summons." He shut the journal with a sharp motion, as though the act itself were a ward against its influence. "You must destroy this immediately." "But no," his voice cracked with an urgency that chilled me. "You do not understand what you've brought into your home. This is not a record. It is a beacon." Before I could respond, he thrust the journal back into my hands and ordered me to leave. As I stepped outside, I heard the sound of a heavy bolt sliding into place behind me, followed by the unmistakable click of a lock. I turned to glance back at his house, but froze when I saw the faint glow of light behind his curtains suddenly extinguish. The next day, I learned that Professor Armitage had vanished. His house was found locked from the inside, his belongings untouched, but there was no sign of him anywhere. His disappearance was the first, but it would not be the last. The unraveling of reality continued unabated. News reports spoke of mass disappearances in isolated regions, entire villages wiped clean of life, leaving behind nothing but strange scorch marks and the lingering scent of ozone. A bizarre fog began to spread in remote areas, its appearance accompanied by sudden, inexplicable blackouts. Survivors spoke of feeling an oppressive presence within the fog, as though they were being watched by countless unseen eyes. In my own life, the phenomena grew even more terrifying. The journal's hum had intensified, becoming a low, pulsating vibration. The shadows in my home now moved openly, sliding across walls and ceilings with an intelligence that defied explanation. Once, I awoke to find the journal hovering inches above my desk, its pages flipping furiously as though caught in an invisible wind. But the most chilling moment came one evening when I glanced at my reflection in the bathroom mirror. For a fleeting instant, my reflection did not move with me. It stared back with an expression that was not my own, its eyes glinting with a malevolent light. I stumbled backward, and when I looked again, it was gone. It was then that I understood. The journal was not merely a relic of a dead world, but a conduit for the entity that had consumed it. The devourer of realities was aware of me now, its presence growing stronger with each passing day. The journal had become a gateway, and I was its unwitting sentinel. I sought answers wherever I could, scouring ancient texts and consulting those few who would still speak to me. Each lead ended in horror. One historian, an eccentric recluse named Mordain, agreed to examine the journal but disappeared 2 days later, leaving behind only a frantic note. "The veil is thin. It is here." My isolation deepened as those around me abandoned or vanished, but even in solitude, I could not escape the encroaching madness. The signs were everywhere. Blackened skies, failing electronics, and an ever-present hum that seemed to emanate from the earth itself. I realized with a sinking dread that the journal was no longer merely a threat to me. It was a harbinger of the end, and its influence was spreading far beyond the walls of my home.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Part 4. The journal's revelations turned darker, its pages yielding fragments of a ritual that promised salvation, though the price it demanded was monstrous. I spent sleepless nights deciphering these grim instructions, piecing together a ceremony that could, at least temporarily, halt the devourer's advance. But the warnings etched into the margins of the text were explicit. Success demanded a vast sacrifice, one that would stain my soul beyond redemption. The ritual required certain materials, sigils to be drawn in fresh blood, ancient runes carved into stone, and offerings of flesh. These were not merely symbolic gestures, but conduits for unimaginable energy channeled directly to the force I sought to repel. The journal spoke of the ritual as a double-edged blade, one that could drive the devourer away only by satiating its insatiable hunger. It would take the lives of thousands to save billions. At first, I recoiled at the prospect. Such an act was unthinkable. Could I condemn so many to death, even for the sake of humanity's survival? The moral weight of the decision crushed me, and for days I left the journal untouched, retreating into an increasingly fragile sanity. But the signs around me continued to escalate. Reports of disappearances grew more frequent, with entire cities vanishing into silence. The black fog was no longer confined to isolated regions. It seeped into populated areas, bringing with it chaos and panic. And then, the dreams came again, more vivid and horrifying than ever before. I saw Earth as the dead world, its cities reduced to twisted ruins, its skies choked with alien constellations. The whispers grew louder, forming words that dripped with malice. "You cannot stop it, only delay it." I awoke with the words echoing in my ears, my body trembling with a cold that felt as though it emanated from within. Desperation left me with no choice. I could not stand by and watch the world crumble while I held even the faintest hope of salvation. With trembling hands, I prepared for the ritual. The instructions were precise and maddeningly complex. The sigils had to be drawn at midnight, their lines unbroken and infused with the essence of the living. For this, I used my own blood, letting it drip from a shallow cut across my palm. The runes required placement at cardinal points, carved into slabs of black stone that I had to procure at great personal risk. Each rune took hours to inscribe, and with every strike of the chisel, I felt the weight of my actions deepen. The final component of the ritual was the most horrifying, an offering of flesh, taken from those who would never see the light of day again. The journal was explicit in its demands. The lives claimed by the ritual could not be random. They had to be gathered with intent, their deaths a deliberate acknowledgement of the price being paid. I wept as I considered what this meant, my mind racing through possibilities. I could not bring myself to kill, but the ritual seemed to suggest alternatives. Those already marked for death, those on the brink, might suffice. I visited the darkest corners of the city, seeking those whose lives had been abandoned by society. The terminally ill, the forgotten, the dying. I begged for their consent, offering them no lies about what their sacrifice would mean. To my astonishment, a few agreed, their gazes filled with a kind of grim resolve. They saw in my desperation a reflection of their own, and though I knew it would damn my soul, I accepted their sacrifices. The night of the ritual was a cacophony of terror and determination. The sigils glowed faintly beneath the pale light of a crescent moon, their lines pulsing with an otherworldly energy. The runes hummed in unison, vibrating the air with a low, guttural resonance that I felt in my bones. The sacrifices, those brave souls who had given themselves willingly, lay still within the circle, their faces calm even as I chanted the incantations scrawled within the journal's pages. As the final words left my lips, the air around me grew heavy and electric. A sound like distant thunder echoed from nowhere and everywhere at once, and the black fog began to seep into the ritual space. For a moment, I feared I had failed, that I had only hastened the devourer's arrival. But then the fog recoiled, as if struck by an unseen force. The ground trembled, and a deep, guttural roar reverberated through the air, shaking the very foundations of reality. I had done it. The devourer had been pushed back. Or so I thought. The victory was short-lived. The journal's pages turned blank after the ritual, their cryptic symbols replaced by a faint, shimmering void. I felt a sharp pain in my chest, as though a thread had been tied to my heart and was being pulled taut. The sensation grew stronger, spreading through my limbs and into my mind. It was then that I realized the truth. The ritual had not repelled the devourer. It had merely redirected its attention onto me. The journal was not a tool of salvation, it was a trap, a beacon designed to lure the desperate into offering themselves as vessels. I had bound the devourer not to earth, but to my own soul, tethering it to this plane through the very act of defiance. The knowledge hit me like a hammer, leaving me gasping for breath. In the days that followed, I began to change. My reflection grew distorted, its eyes burning with a faint, inhuman light. The shadows in my home no longer moved of their own accord. They moved with me, as though responding to my unspoken will. I could feel the devourer's presence within me, a vast and unfathomable hunger that whispered of worlds beyond my comprehension. And yet, I was still me, or so I believed. My thoughts were my own, though they were tainted by the entity's influence. I knew that this state was temporary, that the devourer would consume me entirely in time. But before that could happen, I resolved to do one final act. I would write. Part 5. I write this now in the fleeting moments before my mind succumbs fully to the force I sought to repel. My hands tremble as I pen these words, not from fear alone, but from the weight of the knowledge that what I have done cannot be undone. The journal rests beside me, its pages empty, as though mocking my futile attempts to stave off the inevitable. I have become the vessel for the devourer, its consciousness stirring within me like a beast rousing from slumber. The transformation began subtly. At first, it was a faint thrumming sensation in the back of my skull, a vibration that grew stronger with each passing hour. My dreams no longer belonged to me. They were windows into countless other worlds, each one in the final throes of annihilation. I saw civilizations far grander than our own, their spires reaching into alien skies, reduced to rubble in the wake of the devourer's hunger. I heard their screams as though they were my own, and with each vision, I felt a small part of myself erode. The physical changes followed soon after. My reflection became a stranger, its features warped by faint otherworldly distortions. My eyes, once a dull and unremarkable gray, now glowed faintly in the darkness, as if lit from within by some infernal flame. Shadows clung to me like a second skin, their movements no longer dictated by the light, but by my own will. I realized with dawning horror that I was no longer entirely human, though what I had become, I could not say. But it was not only myself who suffered the consequences of my actions. The world around me began to reflect the growing presence of the devourer. The fog, which I had hoped to banish, returned with renewed vigor, creeping through the streets of nearby towns and leaving silence in its wake. Reports of disappearances skyrocketed, and those who remained spoke of strange phenomena, flickering lights, distorted reflections, and a pervasive sense of being watched. I could feel the devourer's hunger through the tether it had established with me. It was vast and unrelenting, a void that no amount of life could fill. And yet I knew that its focus had shifted, for now at least. My actions had delayed its arrival, but I had also ensured that its hunger would one day return. It was a reprieve, not a victory, and the price was one I had already begun to pay. It is with this grim understanding that I now commit my final act. The journal, though blank, retains its power. I can feel it even now, its presence a faint pulse that echoes my own heartbeat. I have tried to destroy it, through fire, through water, through any means I could imagine, but it resists all efforts, as though protected by the same force that binds it to the devourer. I have come to accept that it cannot be destroyed, only passed on. To that end, I have written this account, embedding it with all that I have learned. The journal is not merely a record of the devourer's conquests. It is a warning, one that has been sent across countless worlds in the hope that someone, somewhere, might succeed where others have failed. It is a faint and terrible hope, but it is all that remains. I will leave the journal where it is certain to be found, perhaps by an archivist, as I once was, or by some curious soul drawn to its unknowable allure. They will read these words as I once read the words of another, and the cycle will begin anew. I cannot say whether this is cruelty or salvation, for I no longer trust my own judgment. The devourer's influence clouds my thoughts, twisting them in ways I cannot fully comprehend. Even as I write, I feel its presence growing stronger. The whispers have returned, louder now, their words clearer and more insistent. They speak of worlds yet to be consumed, of the countless lives that will fuel the devourer's endless hunger. They speak of me, not as a man, but as a tool, a fragment of the entity's will made flesh. I can feel myself slipping away, my thoughts blending with its incomprehensible vastness. Soon, I will be no more. To you who have found this journal, I offer only this. Flee while you can. Leave this place and forget you ever laid eyes upon these words. The knowledge contained within these pages is not salvation. It is a beacon, a lure that draws the devourer ever closer. By reading this, you have invited its gaze, and it does not look away. But if you cannot bring yourself to flee, if you, like me, are drawn to the forbidden allure of understanding, then know this: the devourer cannot be stopped, only delayed. The ritual I performed was not a solution, but a postponement, a brief respite that comes at an unbearable cost. Should you choose to follow in my footsteps, know that the price will be yours to pay, and the consequences yours to bear. I leave this warning not out of hope, but out of necessity. The cycle must continue, for the alternative is a silence far more terrible than anything you can imagine. Perhaps you will find a way to succeed where I have failed. Perhaps you will uncover some secret hidden within the journal's endless horrors. But if you do not, if you, like so many others, succumb to its influence, then know that your story will be the next to be written within these pages. I can write no more. The whispers have become a roar, and my hands are no longer my own. The shadows gather around me, and I feel the devourer's gaze upon me, its vast and unfathomable presence pressing against the fragile boundaries of my mind. To whoever finds this, may you fare better than I. But know this above all else: once the devourer sees, it does not look away.
You've just heard Journal of a Dead World, written by J.P. Netherrain, performed by Malcolm Blackwood, with production by Aaron Sawicki. This story was originally featured on Scary Stories Told in the Dark, and we're proud to bring it to you again tonight to heighten Malcolm Blackwood's remarkable talents as both host and narrator. If you enjoyed tonight's performance, we encourage you to explore Scary Stories Told in the Dark, now in its 19th season. New episodes premiere every Sunday on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel and are available wherever your favorite podcasts can be found. Hundreds of episodes await you, including an extensive archive featuring the stellar work of original host Otis Gyre, along with Malcolm's newer contributions. There is no shortage of terror waiting for you. Why not dive in tonight? And if you haven't already, please consider following Chilling Tales for Dark Nights, leaving us a 5-star rating or review, and sharing the show with a fellow fan of the macabre. You can find even more terrifying tales at creepypastastories.com and stay up to date with Evil Idol 2025 and all our latest releases by subscribing to our YouTube channel. Of course, be sure to check out Scary Stories Told in the Dark, now in its 19th season, with new episodes premiering every Sunday on the Chilling Tales for Dark Nights YouTube channel or wherever your favorite podcast can be found. Hundreds of episodes await you, including an extensive archive featuring the unforgettable performances of Otis Gyrie, alongside newer installments hosted by Malcolm Blackwood. Memberships are available now at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, offering ad-free listening, early access, exclusive content, and our complete archive for only $7.99 per month with discounted annual options. Follow us on Facebook, X, Instagram, and TikTok. And as always, thank you for spending part of your night with us. And now, fellow lover of the macabre, I'm afraid our evening together draws to a close. You've been listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. Until next time, I'm your host, Steve Taylor, reminding you to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listeners. Sweet dreams.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.